Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Voice of America.
The Voice of America has been commemorating Women's History Month with a series of reports on influential women in Africa and around the world. South Sudan-born Sarah Chan made history as the first woman to scout for an NBA team in Africa. Sarah joined me and my VOA colleague, Mukbil Yabaro, for a special Basketball Africa League podcast. I asked Sarah how the league has evolved after recently tipping off its third season.
The Basketball African League has progressively improved over the years. The team they have settled in more. The strength of the BAL rosters exponentially shot up. Clubs are now more sophisticatedly choosing how to scout their import players, and they're more strategic with picking the imports that fill in their specific needs, as opposed to season one, when teams were just signing the best players they could find. Then secondly, the league did a great job of hosting a combine in Paris, France, for aspiring BAL players ahead of the 2023 Basketball African League season. And this falls within the second half of the NBA season and trade deadlines. And then also you could see the strength of the league through import players such as Jerome Randall, the current U.S. Monastir point guard, who is very accomplished in many leagues and around the world, including Australia, and he was very, very successful. So such players, considering the Basketball African League, as a viable option, this just goes to show the strength of the Basketball African League so far, and it's only going to get better.
No, absolutely. I like that point you brought up about the combine as well. Creating the hype sometimes for a league like this is really amazing. Just to go on that point, do you see a Women's Basketball Africa League being created in the next 3 to 5 years?
Oh, man, that's an exciting question. I could see that happening naturally, but I would think that, you know, the most important thing in the initial stages of any league is always you want a good stability before you start something new. But there are a ton of great initiatives around the league for women. And from a women's perspective, not just developing players per se. And this includes like the women's camp beforehand in the Sahara Conference that took place. Then secondly, the NBA's commitment to youth programs, such as Basketball Without Borders, and generally the women representation in the league, from the sidelines, media broadcasting, like the Ashadam, referees, from scouting perspective, like myself, and so forth. So I think I could see it naturally happening, but I think the most important thing about where the league is right now is stability before we start or before anything else starts.
In your opinion, Sarah, if you had to give the BAL a grade for creating excitement about the league itself, what kind of grade would you give the BAL?
I think I would give them the highest grade there is, because from season one all the way through this season three, the BAL has done an excellent job creating excitement around the league from their power of storytelling and shaping narratives around the teams, from the entertainment quality around sports. If you look at the artists that they're bringing, the musical acts at halftimes, the influencers and the Bobo-dom from the art community, the inspirational group of, you know, personnel that they've brought through the entertainment aspect of it. I think it has been such an incredible show so far. But, you know, we're at the beginning of the Sahara Conference, but definitely there is a build and excitement. And the fact that my colleagues in Canada and the U.S. are constantly asking what is going on the continent with Bao, and, you know, especially during this week, that in itself, I think they've created an amazing buzz and excitement around the league. But also having these games broadcasted on ESPN worldwide is a big deal. And the Bao is playing on NBA TV and so forth. I think the reach that the Bao has is incredible. And I think they've done a great job at creating the excitement around the league.
And Sarah, that reminds me.
Voice of America.
The Voice of America is kind of flexing its multilingual muscles in terms of our Basketball Africa League coverage. We're broadcasting the games on radio in five different languages. English,
wow.
French, Bambara, Portuguese, and Kenya, Rwanda. So nice, yeah, kind of a broad scope.
Absolutely. Yes. As you spoke on and touched on earlier, Sarah, with the BAL's gender equity initiatives and, you know, having the female referees and the scouts such as yourself, and this being Women's History Month, you've made history as
right.
being the first NBA female scout to Africa. How do you feel about that? And what do you feel like is the next steps maybe for the NBA as it pertains to initiatives like that?
I think, let me just point out the ones that they've already had, like Ball for Her initiative, which I think is such an incredible and inspiring atmosphere where women come together and the dialogues and just, you know, the women being celebrated is huge in itself. And then if we just talk about from reporting to head coaches to medical staff, scouts to team ownership, such as Cape Town Tigers, to young girls that around the league that they usually bring during games for mentorship and all of that, and just the larger scope of NBA through the Basketball Without Borders and the girls programs. I think they're doing an incredible job with the gender equity initiatives, and I think it's only going to expand more. I am so impressed with what they're doing on the continent, and this is exactly what we need.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Sarah, kind of a two-part question for you. What's it like to work for Masai Ujiri, and can you comment on the impact he's had on basketball development in Africa?
Man, that's big brother. Masai. Oh, man, what to say, where to start? Masai is an exemplary leader, really. He's one of, I tell people all the time, one of the toughest people there is on me since the beginning of my journey and career. But he is an amazing leader, very hands-on. He's focused on the Toronto Raptors being the best team in the NBA, and his passion for the continent supersedes him, really. Engaging with him on a primary level, I know Africa drives him. He's an incredible father to his kids, an amazing husband and his wife, but just one of the best people you can ever work for, because he will hold you accountable, but he will also push you up to make it happen. And he's always about, you know, uplifting. It's not about us. It's about uplifting the next person. And you can see through the Giants of Africa organization with the programs that we do across the continent. But just, you know, through the Giants of Africa's Build Within initiative, he committed to building 100 courts. And as of January this year, we stand at 26 courts across our beautiful continent, from Senegal to Kenya to Nigeria to Tanzania to Rwanda, Burkina Faso, and Somalia and South Sudan, just to name a few. But Somalia and South Sudan are so near and dear to my heart because, well, South Sudan is home, but Somalia is similar to home, right? And some of these places people might shy away from going into because there's always the safety factor. But Masai wants to go to every corner of the continent to create access to play, and he is very vocal on the subject of gender equity, building a court in Samburu Girls, building a court in Mogadishu at the Elman Peace Foundation, to visiting refugee camps from Dadaab to Kakuma, to have a front row seat to these places, and to see his heart for the continent, to see his service to humankind, and also just watch him with the Raptors is incredible. But he's first and foremost a good human being, and he's an exemplary leader.
No, absolutely.
It is an honor to work with such a person.
No, I hear you. I feel like you could talk about Masai for forever, literally.
Forever.
Like he's,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, so.
He's definitely one of those leaders. No, that's amazing. And going back to your point, yeah, I feel like for me as a Somali American as well, you know, Somalia is near and dear to mm-hmm. my heart. You know, Elwad Elman is a good friend of mine as well. So I saw that initiative that Giants of Africa did with Elman Peace as well. It's amazing to see. Just to segue on that, how has the scouting game changed in your mind, you know, ever since you became the managing scout for the Toronto Raptors in Africa?
I'll go back to Masai and his vision for the continent. Mm-hmm. And with the Raptors, we already had scouts on the continent from Senegal to Cameroon to South Sudan and Nigeria way beforehand. I'd say a couple of years back. And so when I started working and working closely with Patrick Engelbert, the director of global scouting for the Toronto Raptors, at that time, it was only one or two other scouts on the continent. And to see how far it has come now, when you go to Basketball Without Borders, and it's about about 20 teams from the league represented there, and then you come to the first season and it's 20 to almost 30 of the teams that have scouts on the ground. It goes to show you just, you know, what this league represents, but also that the scouting game has changed and there is a movement, which, you know, NBA teams are starting to see being on the ground and having a boot on the ground is a competitive advantage to their teams.
I'm VOA Sonny Young. I'm joined by Mukbil Yabarow. We're chatting with Sarah Chan, lead scout in Africa for the NBA's Toronto Raptors. Sarah, under the current BAL rules, each team is allowed four foreign-born players. Some have said that maybe the BAL should go maybe all African in approach rather than bringing in foreign players, make it an African league to really develop these young African players. What are your thoughts?
I think that's a great question. When starting a league, the default is let's get international players because everybody wants to win. People get great imports that adds to the competitive edge. At the end of the day, it's a business and it is part of the life cycle of the league. However, as the league matures, you start to have younger and younger talents that are coming across. And if you look at the incredible, and I think it's a game changer, the Elevate program that the NBA added to this league, which consists of our African young talent. Mm-hmm. This is such an exciting element from a scouting perspective. And this is the thing that draws the NBA to the league, the Elevate prospects. So seeing teenagers play against men and performing, and clearly they are players from this league that have passed through the BAL, and they're currently playing, they're currently players that are playing that you will hear their names called in the NBA drafts in the next few years.
Right.
And you can't say that about many leagues around the world. So yeah, initially the league starts out with getting international players and, you know, business perspective, everybody wants to win. But as it matures, there's younger and younger players that are coming in And the NBA Academy is doing a great job with this young prospects. And this adds to the value of our league. But then, like I said, mark my words, there's players that have come through this league and there are players that are currently playing that in the near future, you'll hear their names be called in the NBA drafts. And this is something you can't say about many leagues across the world.
That's Sarah Chan, who made history as the first woman to scout for an NBA team in Africa. And Sarah spoke with me and my VOA colleague, Mukbil Yabaro, via WhatsApp from Nairobi, Kenya.
March is Women's History Month, and there's no better time to celebrate the accomplishments of women. Tell us about the woman that left positive marks in your life. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA is always happy to hear your voice. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL on The Voice of America.
Sporty greetings. I'm Arun Okori, Nigerian professional table tennis player. You're listening to the Sony Side of Sport on The Voice of America.
Aruna Quadri gets top billing in another extra spicy African sports package from Samson Omale. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you too, Sonny. We begin the wrap of Africa sport highlights for this weekend in Singapore, where Nigeria's top table tennis player, Aruna Quadri, has continued to set records after becoming the first African to qualify for the quarterfinals of the WTT Singapore Smash. Aruna defeated world number 4 Tomokazu Harimoto in the round of 16 of the men's singles event at the Infinity Arena on Thursday. The Nigerian outclassed Harimoto to end his losing streak against the tournament's fourth seed in 11-7, 13-11 to 11-7 scores. Before the historic win, the Nigerian had lost thrice to the Japanese superstar, who is ranked 4th in the world. Aruna, who is ranked 14th in the world, showed class and composure to stun Harimoto at the big stage in Singapore.
I actually spoke with some coaches here, and they gave some great advice how to play, and I was like, okay, let me try. You know, I've been trying some sorts before against him, it was not working, but today some of the advice from the coaches, it's really worked very well. But of course, I have to keep that to myself for the next meeting.
In mixed martial art news, Nigeria's Kamaru Usman is gearing up for a violent showdown with Leon Edwards in their trilogy bout at the UFC 286 main event on Saturday, as the former champion looks to regain his welterweight title. Usman, who outpointed Edwards in 2015, lost the title to the Jamaican-born Briton in August 2022 after dominating the 31-year-old until a head kick knocked him out seconds to the end of the encounter. The Nigerian American will take on Edwards at the London O2 Arena on Saturday, and Usman has claimed that he is in a rare, violent mindset heading into the bout.
I go so hard in training camps in preparing for these fights to where I have that much of a gap on everybody just because of how much I prepare. So, you know, this camp was basically correcting some, you know, little mistakes that I made in the fight. That was the sole purpose of it. And, you know, Saturday, once I go out there and I correct those mistakes, I mean, how's the loss happen?
In volleyball news, Esperance du Tunis defending champions CS Faxien, USD Sfax, and AS Marsa have all booked their tickets to the semifinals of Tunisia's Volleyball Cup 2022-2023 season after Wednesday's quarterfinal matches. Esperance defeated US Carthage 3-0. AS Marsa knocked out ASTT Sfax 3-1. CS Faxien eliminated MS Bolsesem 3-1, while USD Sfax got into the last four after a win over Sadia CD Bozdad in a 3-1 victory. In the semifinals scheduled between April 24th and 28th, Osborne's Duchennes will face UST's Fax, while CS Faxian will meet AS Marsa. And out to cricket, where former South African captain Dane Van Niekerk has retired from international cricket at the age of 29, having been left out of the squad for last month's Women T20 World Cup due to fitness concerns. Van Niekerk played 194 times for South Africa across three formats and was the first bowler to take 100 ODI wickets for the women's team. Van Niekerk last represented her country in September 2021 before a broken ankle ruled her out of the 2022 Women's 50-over World Cup in New Zealand. And now to Namibia, where Cyril Mola, a pool player from Namibia, will be representing the country at the International Pool Association Grand Finale in China. He will be traveling to the port city of Gwangju. Mola is a pool player from the Celtic Pool Club in Swakopmund and is currently ranked number one in Namibia. The number one status earned Mola an invite to the global finale of the International Pool Association, where he will be battling it out against the world's 64 best players. He will be participating in the discipline of Chinese 8-ball at the pool tournament, which is the world's highest paid.
It is really a historical event because it's the first time that we are playing Chinese 8-ball in Namibia. And it's also a door opener for each and every member and supporter. So at the end, we actually have now our door into the international arena, which is actually a blessing for all of us in Namibia.
In rugby news, Herbert Mensah, sports administrator and president of the Ghana Rugby Football Union, has announced his candidacy for the president of the World Rugby's Africa Association, Rugby Africa, the governing body of rugby in Africa. Rugby Africa will be electing a new president at the annual general meeting to be held in Cape Town on the 18th of March. Mensah, who was nominated by the Nigeria Rugby Football Federation to run for president, says he intends to drive the business aspect of rugby on the continent to make it more attractive for investment in the sports.
Sport is big business. It's no use being what we have been over the last decades of coming in and then expecting that somebody will assist us, because there are inequalities. We do understand that World Rugby, we're not a priority for them. So now we need to raise our bar so we can go back to World Rugby and say, look, you give us about $2 million a year or there and thereabouts. Yet somebody from Rugby Europe can get 5 million quid a year just for one country.
In football news, Kigali, the Rwandan capital, played host to the 73rd FIFA Congress, where incumbent president Gianni Infantino was re-elected on Thursday for the next 4 years. Infantino ran unopposed and his re-election was confirmed at the annual FIFA Congress. The 52-year-old, who was re-elected by delegates from the 211 member associations in 2019, could remain at the helm of world football until 2031, as his first three-year tenure is considered incomplete.
Well, being of course, president of FIFA is an incredible honor. It is an incredible privilege as well. And it is also a great responsibility. I'm truly humbled and touched by your support. And I simply promise you that I will continue serving FIFA, serving football all over the world, serving all 211 member associations of FIFA.
Staying in Kigali, Morocco has joined the Portuguese and Spanish Football Association's joint bid to host the 2030 World Cup. On Wednesday in Kigali, the European football staff went into the 73rd FIFA Congress organized in Rwanda to validate the integration of the North African bid into the Spanish-Portuguese project. Morocco's inclusion will apparently replace Ukraine in the three-nation bid, which had said it will join Spain and Portugal in the joint effort in October 2022. Fernando Gomez, Portugal's Football Association president, confirmed the inclusion of Morocco on the sidelines of the FIFA Congress in Kigali.
Very happy to announce that Morocco will be incorporated in our bid. There are two continents very close, three countries very close. Each capital of each country is 1 hour distance from the others. It's known that our people, our population in every country is full of the enthusiasm with football. So In my opinion, this World Cup in 23, organized by the three countries, could be a fantastic World Cup.
The renewed alliance now means there will be two transcontinental bids, with the other being between Greece, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. Ghanaian winger Christian Atsu, who died in the aftermath of the earthquake in Turkey last month, was laid to rest on Friday. The 31-year-old Atsu was found dead on February 18, 2023, following the devastating earthquake in Turkey and Syria on February 6, which killed more than 50,000 people in both countries. He had been playing for the Hatayaspor club. The state-assisted funeral took place at the forecourt of the state house in Accra. He will be interred in his hometown of Dogobon. Ghanaian veteran sports journalist, writer and commentator Kwabena Yebua, who was at the funeral, said Christian Atsu's fame never got into his head.
Such an extraordinary personality, his sense of humility, he never allowed his fame and wealth to get into his head. Oftentimes, when footballers get very famous, they tend to be a bit haughty and they tend to be a bit supercilious. Atsu never, ever got to that point. He never forgot his roots. He never, ever forgot his roots. He never forgot his friends. And he always tried very hard to give back to society. And there's a reason you find the plethora of schemes that he set up to help society.
That's Ghanaian sports journalist Kwabena Yeboah. And thanks to Samson Omale for that package of African sports news. Solomon Adjei was one of the mourners who attended Friday's funeral for Christian Atsu.
Well, I think what we just saw here is a big testament that Ghanaians do love Christian Atsu. A life well lived, but cut off suddenly by this, you know, tragedy. You look at the dignitaries that attended this particular ceremony, it tells you that it has really touched the hearts of a lot of people. And for me, I think it's a huge lesson to everyone out there, be it a star or a mere person. Live your life well and you'll be celebrated. What the state has done for Atsu today, you know, is there for everyone to see. That if you die for your country, definitely there's going to be that, you know, time that you'll be celebrated, even in life or death. So that's the basic lesson I've learned here today.
On a personal level, one basic lesson I learned about the life of Christian Atsu is he had a tremendous humanitarian spirit. Kent Mensah filed this report from Accra, Ghana.
Off the pitch, Atsu was known for his generosity, giving scholarships to poor school children back in Ghana and also paying fines for prisoners to gain their freedom. Abdul Hai Yati, the owner of Cheetah FC in Ghana, first discovered Atsu and facilitated his maiden trip to Portugal for trials. He said Achu's life, although short, was well lived.
Christian don't like seeing people unhappy. I would describe Christian as an angel on earth. The way he does his things, sometimes you don't believe it. I think we need to remember Christian for his generosity, how humble he is, how determined he is. But it saddened my heart that his last flight back to Ghana was the one that I have to come in and receive his body. But I think I'm very proud of him.
Atsu played 65 games at the national level for Ghana's national team, the Black Stars, and won player of the tournament at the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea, where Ghana lost the final to Ivory Coast on penalties. Atsu is survived by his wife, Marie-Claire Rupio, and three children. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
And that wraps up the March 17th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. Have a good weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.